Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.
Hello everyone, welcome to Road to Cheltenham. We have got another packed show for you, haven't we, Ruby, after the Dublin Racing Festival? Another news too.
I think so, or I hope so.
Yeah, that is our intention, certainly. So we're going to crack on. We'll start by the news from the Andy and Gemma Brown dispersal sale. You'll know on Monday at Tattersall's Island, they hosted a dispersal sale for the Silks of Coldwell Construction. 29 lots, a total of €5.29 million. The horses cost collectively. And we also had a record for Jump's horse, that horse there called Coldwell Potter, being sold under auction, €740,000 and heading to Paul Nicholls. Now, what everybody at home wants to know really is, you know, what's going to happen to these horses in terms of, are they going to run at the Cheltenham Festival or elsewhere this season? The intention with Coldwell Potter seems to be that they might wait till Aintree, give him some time to acclimatise.
Yeah, it's a change of stable, change of feed, probably change of environment, gallop. And it's tricky when you buy a horse from somebody else's yard, where they fit into your regime as regards fitness, etc. So, that's what Paul is thinking. Maybe entry, and he was bought as a novice chaser for next season, in which he should be a top-class one, or he'd be hoping he would be.
What do you make of these numbers? Because we've got Mighty Bandit going for €420,000. Imagine €320,000. Pied Piper, €570,000. Phil Dawes, €620,000. What's your reaction to those figures?
It's not my department. I don't buy and sell horses. I'm not involved in the purchase of any horses. And Willie Mullins is, I have a third of a brood mare. But what I suppose when you look at what point-to-point winners are making, 450, 500,000 or 400, 350, you'd be kind of hoping horses with form relative to what they've achieved would be making that sort of money, I suppose.
It's exactly that I was wondering. I thought it was a very interesting test for that as to whether proven achievement in many of these cases is actually worth more than the hope and potential of a horse that could be anything.
I suppose we'd say, like the likes of Coldwell Potter, what you're also buying, though, is a horse without a novice hurdle season as such. Mm. So your chance to win maiden hurdle and a couple of novice hurdles is gone. So that probably has to be factored slightly into the value too.
But you know you've got a good one though. That's some of the best novice hurdling form this season.
It is, and it's rock solid, and that's why he fetched a record price. And, you know, Paul Nicholls and his men were able to outbid Gordon Elliott and his men, and that's what happens at an auction. But look, he made a fair throw, and best of luck to Paul and his team, and I suppose hard-looking Gordon Elliott to lose him.
Yes, Gordon Elliott did say, we have got all the ones that we wanted, apart from Coldwell Potter, he acknowledged. And that price tag for Coldwell Potter meant it was a record. The previous record was Interconnected back in May 2019, who cost £620,000 and eventually ran 2 years later, four times without winning. So, you know, there are always risks involved.
Yeah, when you look at it that way, buying potential for £720 rather than buying the dream for £620... or 740, whatever he cost. It's just, look, it's mind blown.
This is money, of course, going out of the racing industry, though. You know, as far as we know, the brands won't be coming back in. I know the door isn't completely closed, but it's not. In other sales, quite often you will see recycling of money within the industry. This is not that case.
No, it's not going to happen. And look, that's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And the bloodstock agents and trainers will have to find new money.
Mm. So Mighty Bandit has gone to Warren Greatrix, the four-year-old with the Triumph Hurdle entry. Warren has got a couple of horses from that sale. Imagine has gone to Harry Derham. Pied Piper and Phil Dawes remain with Gordon Elliott. There was another talking point over the weekend. Both the large British contingent that went to Leopardstown for the Dublin Racing Festival, the record-breaking crowd on the Saturday, some knock-on effects in terms of how comfortable everybody felt and how the services stood up to those numbers, and also some criticism about the one-sided grade ones, in that all eight grade ones went to Willie Mullins. He won 9 out of the 15 races. And rather than move away from what the core point of this show is, Ruby, we decided we're going to do a little bit of a extra for you.
Yeah, look, you could debate the rights, wrongs, good, bads of that for best part of an hour on its own. So, yeah, we'll do that after.
Well, I'm not promising an hour.
No, it won't be an hour, but even you could. And we're going to do it later.
We are. OK, so you can catch that. It won't be an hour. It'll be about 10 minutes, honestly. We can catch that on the Racing TV website and also on our YouTube channel, which will go live with this show from 6 a.m. on Friday morning. But we're going to move on now to talk about some actual action from the past week, starting with the hurdlers. And the obvious place to start, Ruby, is the Irish champion hurdle. And I wanted to get a handle both on how Stateman had run in winning it and also how Ballyburn had run in winning the Tattersall's Island 50th Derby Sale Novices Hurdle or whatever it's called.
Yeah, it is, and look, we put them together. Obviously, they bypassed both hurdles in the Novice Hurdle, the last hurdle twice, whereas in the Champion Hurdle, they only bypassed it on the second circuit. I do think that was a brilliant initiative from Lorcan Muir to leave it in when the sun wasn't shining. He stood down at the last hurdle and took it out then when the sun did shine. I thought that was a step in the right direction. But we'll stick these together, and you see Boher Road does go a better gallop in the Novice Hurdle than Imperial Pass is going in the Champion Hurdle. Now, Imperial Pass doesn't want the front run, whereas Boher Road is quite happy to do so, and that allows the novices to get away. Imperial Pass keeps jamming on and slowing down. Boher Road is attacking all the way. I'm going to get into the back stretch. You can see that the novices are considerably further ahead than the championship horses, but then they're good horses. Slade Steel, Ballyburn, etc. They're high class horses. You can see Imperial Pass on the left of the screen. He's only slowing down. Paul Townend is riding to win the race, so he's not going to take him on. He does eventually when he gets to the second last, but you can see how far behind they are at the second last hurdle when Ballyburn and Slade Steel start to quicken off the bend. But obviously Stateman does come home a bit quicker and needs down a bit of that deficit from where how far behind he was at the third last till he gets to the winning post. It shows that the Novice was a really good race. The Champion Hurdle was way more tactical, but I still think there were good performances.
I agree. I think quite often with the contrast like this, it can show up a particular performance. In this case, it actually means that both horses, both winners and the runner-up in the case of Slade Steel, come out with credit.
They do, there's no doubt. But here is the statement. If you watch Bob Olinger to Imperial Pass even, it's much easier to see it. Bob Olinger seems to be quickening all the way to the line. You can see it with Stateman, but whatever way Stateman moves, it's not as easy to see it. Maybe because he's Chestnut. It's much easier, in my opinion, to see Bob Olinger quickening and getting away from Imperial Pass. And therefore, you have to think, well, Stateman was quickening more and he got away further.
The $64,000 question, really, with looking ahead now for the rest of the season and the potential clash between Stateman and Constitution Hill, is whether Stateman is better. One of the issues is the thing that Ruby just said, which is that he's essentially unflashy. Let's hear it in Paul Townend's own words.
Yeah, he's just so uncomplicated, professional. Didn't mind Daryl's horse idling in front and jumping right. He's a joy to do at and with. With the last being out, it was probably took Daryl on early enough, but he was going well and he came on the bridle end. So I loved him last year and I love him even more this year because he keeps winning. He's proven his superiority over the horses over here anyway. It's just a pity Constitution Hill is in the way.
And we learned that Stateman suits a scarf as well. That was Paul in conversation with Fran Berry. So I asked you that question and you've put together a series of runs from Stateman to try and work out whether he is any better or heading to March any better than he was 12 months ago.
Yeah, and I suppose the best horse to show him against is Vauban. So here he is off the bend in the Irish Champion Hurdle last year, Honeysuckle Pied Piper's Anna here, and Stateman gets away from Vauban and he does quicken away from Redley. Cheltenham, Vauban was a bit more prominent, gets down his inside, but again, Stateman, even though Paul Townend didn't seem to think so, to my money, visually he's able to get away from Vauban again and as easily quickens off the bend. Stateman goes and finishes second to Constitution Hill and leaves Vauban well behind. This then is the Matheson hurdle. Stateman quickens off the bypass last hurdle and again he gets the same distance ahead of Vauban. So strictly going through Vauban, it's hard to see, but is Stateman a more fluid horse this year? Is he lengthening and quickening better? Possibly he is.
It's interesting, putting those clips back to back to back, I think you do see that maybe he is a bit more loose this season. But it's also difficult to tell whether what you see in the Champion Hurdle is what Constitution Hill does to horses as well.
Yeah, I suppose that's another way of looking at it. But when you're looking at or trying to just gauge it, looking at strides and looking at how horses are moving, you could argue Stateman is moving better this year.
Okay.
Now, you could also say maybe the ground's been a bit slower in Leopardstown this year, and maybe that's suiting them too.
Mm-hmm. It could be. when you're looking at that head-to-head matchup, the market is very much assuming that Constitution Hill is in as good a shape as he was last season. But he has had the more difficult season. His comeback run ended up being postponed because the intended race was rescheduled. He's only run once. He's had a bit of a sniffle that caused him to miss the Unibet International hurdle, whereas Stateman's season has gone like absolute clockwork, hasn't it? And so I'm just pointing out that...
I didn't realise that standing your stable was difficult.
But, you know, in terms of having proof of what the horses are right now, we know much more about what Stateman is right now.
Stateman has turned up and he has the mileage under his belt even. He's ran those races, won those races, and he goes there in good form, arguably better. Constitution Hill, the one time we did see him, he was pretty damn good.
He was, but Stateman has beaten better horses.
Yeah, I know. But maybe it's just, and it is probably Stateman, because he's just not wow. He just keeps getting it done and getting it done, whereas Constitution Hill does open up and you go, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. OK. Well, people will be taking positions come March, so it'll be interesting to see how things pan out. Bob Bollinger, you mentioned him in passing there. He ran second. As after this, they decided to take him out of the champion hurdle. He heads towards Aintree for the Grade 1 there, over 2.5 miles.
Yeah, and he's coming back to himself, Bob. Chasing didn't suit him. He lost his way a bit as a hurdler then last season too, but he definitely has regained his mojo, and arguably that's the career best of a hurdles for him at Leopardstown at the weekend,
I
and
was.
I can see why they're going to Aintree.
Yeah, so can I. I thought that, and I thought he really did knuckle down and,
so
and
did
try
I.
as well.
Like, his head carriage is always the same. Yeah. It's up there, that's where he carries his head. But I thought he ran all the way to the line and he's a big player at Aintree.
Now, Imperi Pass, he's been taken out of the champion hurdle and also the stayers hurdle. He heads towards the Aintree hurdle as well. Daryl Jacob had to try something different, but he is temperamentally unsuited to making the running, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's a laid-back individual. He doesn't kill himself. He had to try something different. Maybe sitting the neck down on Paul Town and enforcing him might have been the thing to try, but it's easy to say that afterwards. He had to do something different. He wasn't going to beat him following him, and he tried something that didn't work, but that's life, and can't keep doing the same thing all the time.
No, of course, no. And Willie Mellon seemed to be suggesting he'll be chasing next season for that horse.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. OK, well, those two horses were scratched from the champion hurdle. Two others were as well. One of them was the juvenile Burdett Road. The other one was Vauban, who we've mentioned in passing. Does that suggest there'll be a flat campaign for this horse?
I think it is. I think that was the idea. Back to Ascot in the summer and head off on his travels again. But, yeah, that's the plan for Vauban. So he was taken out. And it leaves you wondering, how many runners do we have in this champion hurdle? Is it going to be a really small field? And it will be a small field if both Constitution Hill and Stateman get there. I think it'll be a small field, but I don't think Constitution Hill will be the first horse to have scared the opposition off.
There's a different way of looking at that, I wondered. When I saw those four withdrawals and the calibre of at least three of them, I wondered whether it might encourage more people to think they have got a realistic prospect of getting third. You get £48,000 roughly for finishing third in the champion hurdle, £24,000 for fourth, £12,000 for fifth. There's prize money down to eighth. Contrast with the champion, with the county, you get £56,000 to win, £21,000 for second, £11,000 for third.
Yeah, I suppose standing in the number three with £48,000 appeals to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Might
but
do.
Most people prefer to walk in with the winner for 56.
It depends
and roll, and roll the dice. It does, and there's a couple that will be champion hurdle bound that are going to have too much weight and handicaps. I would say the likes of Zarek the Brave, probably not so sleepy. You couldn't see either competing in a handicap. I think they're two definite runners. Maybe Lucia, depending on how she gets on at the weekend in Newbury. And hard to know after that. I mean, if Constitution Hill and Stateman, for some reason, horrible reason, that both of them went awry between now and March, you could have 9 or 10 runners in that race. Mm. But with the two of them there, that's going to make it a smaller field. But look, Arkell and Millhouse did that in the 60s. Constitution Hill is doing it in the noughties. Or not, are we now? 2020 even.
Hugh Morrison has confirmed that Not So Sleepy, the fighting fifth winner, will be going towards the champion hurdle, which is great to hear. Zarek the Brave, you're thinking maybe might be?
I think he might, yeah. That? Yeah, I think it might. Again, he's like, he won a Galway hurdle, but with that penalty on his back, he's probably limiting him to win another handicap, and I could see him floating around trying to rob the 56 or whatever you said, 46 or 56, whatever it was.
48,000 for third.
Yeah.
Lucia, who Ruby's just mentioned, has been taken out of the mare's hurdle. She's one of five scratched from that race, including Jotaro as well. More about her in a few moments' time. As Ruby was saying, Lucia is entering the Betfair hurdle at Newbury on Saturday. There are also seven horses that have been taken out of the stayer's hurdle. They include Ahoy Senor, so bad luck with that. Let's look ahead to Sunday's William Hill Boyne hurdle, shall we? And that has these horses entered. Blazing Cow won it last year and used it as the prep to finishing sixth in the stayer's hurdle. Excitingly, we might see 12-year-old Sire de Burley making his seasonal return. He, of course, is a 3-times Cheltenham Festival winner. He is the reigning stayer's hurdle and Liverpool hurdle winner, and we haven't seen him so far this season. If both of those go, along with the likes of Hidden Valley Lake switching back from fences and Sir Gerhard, could be pretty interesting contest, that.
You're surely going to mention him.
Hmm?
You're surely going to mention him.
Who?
Asterion for lunch.
I wasn't God. Actually going
oh,
to.
Oh, my God. Poor Asterion. You ignored him for the first time in his life. Look, you've Galvin in there, obviously having a prep for the cross-country race. And Sam Majest, who beat Noble Yates at Limerick. He's an interesting one too.
Asterion for lunch. I can only apologise. So time now for the novice hurdlers. We've shown you how the 2-mile novice hurdle race won by Ballyboyne was run vis-a-vis the Irish champion hurdle won by Stateman. Ruby's now going to go into it in some detail. This is the race that fired me up of the 2 days over at the Leopardstown.
Yeah, I thought Juvenile Hurdle was good as well. But look, obviously, Bohoro jumped down and went a good gallop. I was pleasantly surprised at how easy Ballyburn and Slade Steel travelled early. Now, Ballyburn probably jumped slightly quicker than Slade Steel, but back down to 2 miles, these two horses were bought on it. Farron Glory outside them jumped well up there close to the lead at the fourth hurdle. The boat go on at the fifth hurdle, Ballyburn and Slade Steel. Third last, Daddy Longlegs in the yellow gets right in underneath this and pecks. And Patrick Mullins has to ride to hold him his position. But only Boho Road and Facile Mode are gone at the second last. The rest of them are in it, but the cream comes to the top really quickly. Ballyburn goes to the bend and quicken. Slade Steel tries to follow him. Absurd, much better run than he had shown at Christmas. And King of Kingsfield, who'd beaten Mizor West in a maiden hurdle, has run solid too. But I loved how Ballyburn did it. Tripped, no issue to him. And I thought the runner-up ran a blinding race as well. Now, you could argue he has confirmed his maiden hurdle run with King of Kingsfield, but Jack Kennedy has told us on a couple of occasions that a change of tactics seemed to work on King of Kingsfield, so I would argue he's run better there and Slade Steel has improved.
The only thing I would wonder about King of Kingsfield is whether a sounder surface would see him in better light, because there were two factors when Gordon Elliott was talking, wasn't it? One was the way he was ridden, yeah. The other was the ground, and that would have been more testing than previously.
Possibly, but like you go back to bumper form, Ballyburn and Slade Steel, you know, that they run exactly to their bumper form, and much to my lack of doing my homework, the horse that split them in Punchestown won the Nathaniel Lacey.
Ah, yes. More of Dancing City later on. But first,
so bleeding obvious when you look back.
that's Captain Hindsight, that is. Oh. Let's hear from Willie Mullins and what he made of Ballyburn.
I mean, he could go out to the 2.5 if he wanted, but he was very, very good there, you know. So we got to do a lot of thinking now between the... You know, we know he can be sharp enough to do 2 miles. He could be anything, that horse, couldn't he?
Yeah, I thought it screamed supreme myself.
Yeah, well, we have a bit of the old dancer there, so we'll see.
Who's Mythical Dancer?
I'd like to know too. I'm assuming he meant Mystical Power, but there's a fair chance he did. But funny enough now, if you lined them all up in a line of 500 bay horses, he'd pick out Mystical Dancer and not Mystical Power and not Mythical Dancer.
Don't you start. So, I mean, that's the thing though, isn't it? It's not just working out what each horse needs and would be best suited to. I think we both agree that we think that Ballyburn is a supreme type horse, the way he goes, the pace he has, the fact that he could deal with a race that would be run in the way that the Supreme so often is. I mean, we see horses, I know he's bred to stay a lot further. We've seen Kick and King, Best Mate, for example, run really well in Supremes in the past.
Yeah, but running really well is no good. They both got beaten.
I know.
Ultimately, it's about winning. And look, here he is favourite in the Supreme. I imagine he's favourite in the Bear in Bingham as well. And a lot will depend on where the rest of those horses go, and not so much just Willie's, where the opposition go. And Willie will size up the opposition and then decide where he thinks he has the best chance of winning races.
Well, the aim is to win as many novice hurdles as possible if you are Willie Mullins.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And usually before we've had the other horses sort of fitting around one kind of lodestar, haven't we? And there is quite a significant player here that is a variable, and that is the runner-up Slade Steel. Speaking to Henry de Bromhead immediately afterwards, he was saying, basically, we're as happy as we could possibly be without having won.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought he ran a blinding race. Probably looks like he would struggle to win a Supreme, maybe, and the Bear in Bingham would suit him better. Does that mean he would beat the rest of what Willie has in the Bear in Bingham, and therefore he has to put in Ballyburn? There's a big chance it does, but who knows?
So then you're looking at the rest of Willie Mullins' pack, and you're thinking about Il Atlantique and Reading Tommy Wrong. Then you've got, as we'll come to later, High Class Hero and Dancing City. So there's various horses to be pushing around, and there's some others as well.
And other horses who haven't proven as much. But like, if you're Willie and you're thinking, well, I'll bank on him, something goes wrong to hit one with one, having a backup is a great position to be in. So I'd be surprised if he only runs one in any race.
Yeah. Just looking further back down the field, you mentioned Absurd. Flattened, I mean, did run well a lot better than over Christmas.
Settled.
Flattened out quite a bit.
He did, yeah, settled better. But you'd imagine the way he handled Fast Ground in Australia, that the slower surface there had to be a hindrance to him.
Yeah, better than he managed at Christmas, but
yeah.
still not great. Farran Glory broke a blood vessel, and he'd been jumping a bit airily beforehand.
A little bit, but he was able to go with them through the first mile anyway. Probably expected more from him, but that there's an excuse and a pretty valid one.
Yeah, very much so. He weakened very quickly, so I hope he's OK. Jit Langi, Daddy Longlegs. Any chance we'll see them one more time to get them qualified for handicaps at the festival?
I would be surprised. What was it from last week? 35 days, give them 14 to recover. It's 3 weeks to Cheltenham. I couldn't see Willie running them back that quickly, and generally he wouldn't. And then you're inside the cut-off mark anyway.
I like Jit Langi. I thought he ran really well his first start since May.
Yeah, it was a good performance. He did run well and got a bit tired. And Daddy Longlegs, probably a better surface and preferred, right? I think he looked like a horse that lacked the gear.
Okay. Let's talk about another of Willie Mullins' horses that we need to throw into the mix in these races, the Supreme and the Bear in Bingham, and that is Mr. Geef, who won at Limerick.
Yeah, won a maiden hurdle that was won many moons ago by a certain statesman. Kieran Callaghan rode him, jumped out, made all, pinged the first, jumped really well most of the way around. Now, this wasn't a deep or strong race by any manner of means. But a horse can only win. He beats Ballycannon King and a whole lot of business, but he absolutely sluiced in for Kieran. And it was an impressive performance. But look, we saw that when we get to the juveniles later with Stormheart, with High Wind, with Bunting. Lots of horses can go and bolt in a maiden, and it's not until you put them in the next level you find out what they are.
The one thing I did like was the fluency of his jumping.
Yep. Ex-French horse jumped like a buck, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. So that's going to stand him in good stead. Let's move to one British horse, and that is Jinko Blue, who won at Sandown on Saturday. He's in the Bear in Bingham and the Albert Bartlett. This was a win in a handicap hurdle for novices.
Yeah, and look, only off a mark of 124. Jumped out, decent position, but he got a bit keen with James as they came to the second hurdle here. But if you watch James, how he goes across to the horse on his left, Rock Dance, with moves his left hand, pulls Jinko Blue across onto the boot of the horse outside him and gets him back behind him to get the cover to switch him off. It was a clever bit of riding. He allows Rock Dance up and across, and he gets the cover that he needs then to switch him off. And look at how he was sweating. Obviously, we were We were in Leopardstown. He was quite warm. I don't know what the temperature was like in Ascot. Jumped out to his left down the back straight then. And when he got to the fifth hurdle, you can see him as he comes into shot. The sixth hurdle, James commits him, but the horse only half commits. He sends him and just gets there. But when they get to the second last, he's doing a half speed. Only Titan Discovery is of any real danger at the second last, but he was no danger. Goes to the last, absolutely bolts in, and I would say it pays a handsome compliment to Ben Pauling's personal ambition.
Mm-hmm. You've said before that it's quite impressive when a horse manages to be impressive at Sandown. It's a track that doesn't really...
It doesn't really encourage horses to hit the line strong.
And yet that horse did. He was impressive. James Bowen riding for Nicky Henderson. Just tighten up the jumping, but...
A fraction, but I'd say it was a step, definitely a forward step for him.
Yeah. And then I'm going to head back to Ireland for the next horse. And this is Mercury, who won at Punchestown. This was on his third start over hurdles, but he's had a bit of a truncated early career.
Yeah, he has. Got a bit of a bump at the first hurdle, but Danny Mullins sat in front from there on with Mercury. Jumps the second last well. Lightkeeper was the only danger trying to make a race of it with him, but Mercury easily goes away. Now, if you're going on form, Mercury beats Lightkeeper 13 lengths at Nace a couple of weeks ago. Tully Hill beat Lightkeeper 25 lengths. They've beaten the same horse in different ways at different tracks. But again, Tully Hill and Mercury probably won't get another run between now. If he was to go to Cheltenham, maybe he'll stay at home and go to Ferry House. I don't know. Whereas Tully Hill, I think he's entered or will run it, I think, at Nace the weekend.
So Mercury in the Baring Bingham and the Albert Ball, does he look more like a sort of staying chaser to you?
Well, he was a four-year-old bumper winner in Gorham Park, I think, on real heavy ground, which would suggest he was going to always going to be a stayer more than a speed horse. So whether he'd go to the Albert Bartlett with so few runs, I'd be surprised.
OK. Let's have a look at the Baring Bingham betting, shall we? That's very alliterative, isn't it? Ballyburn is at the top there. And look at the big move there for Slade Seal, who you put up a while ago for this show, Ruby. So Slade Seal, we've been a big fan of this horse from the start of the season. I'm in no way deterred from it, despite the fact he's been beaten.
No, me neither. I think he's a really, really good horse. Look, if Ballyburn, Mystical Power, reading Tommy Wrong, Eel Atlantic, Gidley Park, who we saw being workmanlike last week, Caldwell Potter, we don't know, Billericay Dickie.
Yeah, tell me about Billericay Dickie.
Won well at Punchestown, but... You know, Paul was very conservative on him. Willie was worried about the ground for him. I wonder if flat tracks ultimately suit him best.
Yeah, so not necessarily a Cheltenham-type project. 20-1 Mercury would be on that betting show. Right, OK, we've mentioned Dancing City. Let's see him in action, winning the opening race of the DRF, the Nathaniel Lacey.
Yeah, jumped out, no real pace here. So he booked out in front. Obviously, Jatara and Stellar Story are outside him. Lock Lean missed the first, jams on at the second hurdle with Patrick, and heads off out to his right at the third hurdle. Something to miss with him, because he was never really going for a horse that had won at Limerick. Rachel lands beside Danny at the second hurdle. Now, Jatara is definitely alive and on her hands, but I thought Predator's Gold was even doing more with Paul Townend behind. Jumps to the lead, Rachel did on Jatara, up past the stand. So she didn't have to go much quicker. Rachel, in fairness, was trying to slow this down, and she does keep slowing it down on Jatara. And I felt she was in control of the race at the ninth hurdle. But after they jumped the third last hurdle, if you keep your eyes on Rachel, Dancing City makes that one. But if you keep your eyes to Rachel after this hurdle, when she goes to change her hands here, maybe to change the Jatara's leg, she changes her hands, her left leg slips out and she falls down into the saddle, and that's going to happen. And she has to sit in the saddle to regain her stirrup, but that injected over 2 miles an hour into Jatara, and she quickened away from the field going to the bend, which ultimately probably paid on the run home. Not saying it cost her the race, but it definitely didn't help her chances. Stellar Story, Dancing City, Danny was in a good position. He gets out here at the second last. When Stellar Story goes back, when Paul's going up on the outside, Danny was able to get through, led him at the last on Dancing City, and he keeps going best from Predator's Gold, who'd raced too keenly, and Jatara, who quickened out of the back straight when she didn't want to. It was a subtle enough performance. He's going the right direction. He had that bumper form with Slade Steele and Ballyburn. It looks also obvious now.
Yeah, he managed to split them 6 lengths behind Ballyburn, a length and 3/4 ahead of Slade Steele. He looks like an extra 2 furlongs will suit him well as well for the Albert Bartlett.
Yeah, it stays all day, doesn't he? Yeah.
And Predator's Gold, you'd imagine that he might be dropping back to be amongst the Baring Bingham contingent?
I would have thought so, yeah. He raced a bit keenly, probably after running over 2, change of pace, just didn't switch off.
And as we said earlier in the show, Jatara's been taken out of the mare's hurdle. She's a second-season novice. Kate Harrington was talking about staying behind in Ireland, not heading to Cheltenham.
Ferry has 2.5 miles.
Yeah,
great
exactly.
Novice hurdle.
Yeah,
Easter's so close, only 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Which also could impact horses when you look at it. If you're thinking Brown Advisory, National Hunt Chase, those type horses, that will come too close to the Irish National.
So there's more of an actual choice that's going to have to be
made,
right?
Yeah. Big time.
OK, so those are the novice hurdlers. Let's move on to the juvenile hurdlers, because there's a significant race at the Dublin Racing Festival. That was the Spring Juvenile. It was dominated, like so many of the Grade Ones, by Willie Mullins.
Yeah, look, lined across the track up to the first hurdle, Cargill, Cintillato down the inside, Calicald, Conti, Majborough, High Wind was up there, bunting in behind him, Stormheart towards the back. But Majborough took over under Mark Walsh to the third hurdle, and Cargill settled much better than she did at Christmas for Danny. Now, this is the only hurdle Majborough got anyway close. Got in a bit deep there, but he went a decent gallop. and he jumped really well in front, and it was a good stretch in the field. Now, High Wind, who we'd worried about jumping-wise at Punchestown, his jumping fell apart as the race went on, and no more so than here. High Wind in the yellow cap misses, and Bunting jumps into the back and gets caught, probably further back than Brian Hayes wanted to be. Intelato on the inside in the green, can't quicken off the bend. Danny gets up to Cala Conti and Majbara. Stormheart's coming round the outside, Bunting's coming after him. But after settling much better, Cargis was able to quicken this day and go and win and reverse the form of Cala Conti. I thought for a minute Stormheart was coming to win here. Ethical Diamond coming into your shot left that stinking run in the Maidenhurst of Christmas behind him, where he was no match and turns the, or gets closer to Intelato. But Cargis was really good. I suppose if you're looking at it, you were hoping one would probably jump out like Sergino did last week in Cheltenham. I don't think one did. For the future, I think Majbara is probably a cracking horse with the biggest long-term future, but Cargis was tough, warm heart. Ethical Diamond's a penalty kick in the maiden. He might not even run in the maiden now. He'll probably run another grade of race and be a novice again next year if he can't win a grade one. But yeah, it was a competitive race, but no horse jumped out to me and said, I'll win the Triumph.
Particularly given the race was, you know, well enough run.
Yeah.
It wasn't the kind of race that would have disguised ability in any kind of way. It should have shone a light on it, really.
I would have thought the same.
You like Ethical Diamond, don't you? That's three times now you've brought that horse up. And I suppose he showed a bit more.
He did, yeah. Just in homework, he goes as well, if not better than most of those. Now, homework will put you in the poorhouse, but I'm just glad to see him bring what he was showing at home some bit to the track.
Willie was talking about at least the front four going to the Triumph. You can make an argument for all of them, I think, in different ways, can't you?
Oh, yeah. High Wind will have to jump better. But look, Sergino did shorten for standing in his stable. Yeah. Cargis has gone second favourite. Majbara, I think he'll be... I think long-term, he's the one, maybe with Sergino, that are going to go most
Majbara.
Forward.
Yeah,
Majbara.
Certainly. Willie Mullins was saying the same thing afterwards. Just physically, he's got quite a presence about him.
Yeah, yeah. I think he has. I think he's a lovely looking horse. But no, I'd say Nicky Henderson enjoyed watching that in Leopardstown on Sunday.
Yeah. He said...
Saturday even.
It didn't look as strong as that they might have done, was his comment on that. So, which I think
cheers,
we could take,
Nicky.
He was pretty satisfied with what he saw, and he's obviously won the Triumph seven times. Cargisi's halved in price though after that win, and Ethical Diamond, if you are interested, is 25-1 for the Triumph. Anything that crossed your mind for the Fred Winter as a result of watching that?
No.
Spring Juvenile?
No. They'll all be up the top of that Fred Winter. Mm-hmm. Never even thought about it, to tell you the truth.
And Cala Conti is not coming over either. She's going to go up in trip and run against older fillies, Gordon said. Use the four-year-old allowance.
Oh, Fairy House, the grade one mares.
Mm. That's the plan for her. So, that's where we are with the juveniles. Let us move on to the novice chasers.
Who or what, or why or when was Baring Bingham, or who?
Well,
what are we talking about?
Why and when are important as well. William Baring Bingham was a bloke who bought Prestbury Park towards the end of the 19th century and restarted racing there. There was racing in Cheltenham at various places. They raced at Prestbury Park in the sort of, I don't know, the 1850s and 1860s. And then it was bought by someone who was morally opposed to horse racing, and they didn't have racing there for about 30 years. And then Baring Bingham came along, bought the place as a stud, and brought racing back in 1898, which was fantastically successful. And he essentially started the Cheltenham Festival in 1902, and it became the Cheltenham Festival as we know it in 1911. So that was the first time that was when the National Hunt Chase permanently moved to Cheltenham. So that's Cheltenham considered the centenary to have been 1911 to 2011. And the man who owned the course and saved it from being developed for other uses was William Baring Bingham. Not to be confused with William Bingham Baring, who was an entirely different fella from around the same time. He was the second baronet of Ashburton and had no interest in racing at all. So luckily he didn't buy Prestbury Park.
So the novice chases, and we're going to start with the Ladbrokes Novice Chase at the Dublin Racing Festival, which on the face of it was a disappointing affair because only two horses actually lined up, Factophile versus Gaelic Warrior. At least they were good'uns.
Yeah, they were good'uns, but it's not unheard of in Ireland, in when these meetings were January into February and now solely in February, that you get really small runner novice chases. Undersaw won a three runner Arkell, Ballycasey won a three runner Dr. PJ Moriarty, Vettour won a three runner Killiney, and there's more than them. They're only the three I rode, but it's not unheard of to have a really small field in an Irish novice chase at this time of year.
Yeah, of which more in our extra show about the Dublin Racing Festival and that whole issue. But one of the things with a two runner race, with a match, particularly where one horse seemed to have underperformed, Gaelic Warrior, and one horse finished alone, is people are going to say, well, what is that form worth? And
are
so
they?
What we are going to we are going to contrast it with Hartwood's performance in the handicap chase and just show you how the two races were run.
Yeah, on left of shot is Gaelic Warrior, right of shot is the 25 runner handicap chase. But look, when they get to the last fence in the first circuit, as Gaelic Warrior heads off to his right with Factifile, you can see how far they are in front of Chavez. But it's further in front that these two horses are going to get. First fence in the back straight, the two novices ping it together. Chavez is going to arrive on here now in another minute or two to get to the fence just about now. That's the gap they've opened. These two were trapping Gaelic Warrior and Factifile. Fourth last fence, Gaelic Warrior nods and that's his race over. But those two are nearly at the third last by the time the handicappers get down to the fourth last fence, with Chavez in front of top field. Ben, this is the last ditch. No, second last, watch Factifile, absolutely pings it. Gaelic Warrior is out on his feet. And the second, the handicap chase. They're going to come to the fence now as Factifile is turning in. When you put the two of them together, and that was a really competitive handicap chase that Hartwood won, Sean, this puts context on it. Now, he does slow from here home. Paul Townend is probably thinking, do I jump the last, don't I jump the last? Supposing Factifile stumbles, nods, ducks, and Mark Walsh falls off him. Well, of course, he's going to try and jump it because only one horse in front of you and he unseats him. A couple of fallers at the last in the handicap chase. Mark Walsh is slowing down because he's finishing solo. Rachel Blackmore, Hartwood is chasing the loose horse in front of him. So they actually get closer going to the line. Mm. But I would imagine if Gaelic Warrior had been able to go with Factifile and kept him honest, they'd have finished a hell of a long way in front of the handicap chase.
I have absolutely no doubt that would be the case. Let's have a look at the finishing speed percentages comparing the two. And the key to Factifile is that he went hard, he kept going hard, and he kind of only eased down only when the race was over. Whereas Hartwood has finished with full of potential, suggesting that he could have dealt with a stronger run race and still put up a very good performance.
Yeah, he could, but you look at Hartwood's beginner's chase form, it's rock solid, split in Grange Clare West and Carbert's Cross in Naas. That's a solid run. Mm. And, you know, he's jumped into a handicap as a novice and absolutely hosed up. But like, there is serious depth or context or proof there to what Factifile did. It might have been a two-runner race. It might not have excited too many people other than those associated with him. But if you were watching it, it was some performance.
Now, immediately afterwards, Mark Walsh seemed to be potentially leaning towards the Brown advisory. Having looked at that split-screen comparison, are you of the same view?
I rolled him early last week, actually, and thought, yeah, this definitely wants a trip. But when you put him on grass and put a fence in front of him, he's a much faster horse. I have no doubt he'll stay, but he'd have no problem at 2.5.
So the Turners, do you think the Turners would be more suitable? Because on that evidence, it looks like it would be.
I probably would, yeah. I know if I was riding them, I'd be heading on Turners, and I'd be thinking experience at shorter trips will stand to him down the line when he has to take on Galloping Champ.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? It's that kind of preparation for ultimately stepping into open company. We're not suggesting he doesn't stay the 3 miles.
No, he's always going to stay. To me, it's practice at speed.
Yeah.
And I'd be getting as much practice at 2 miles as I could, or 2.5 even.
So Gaelic Warrior, we spoke immediately afterwards in the Road to Cheltenham Wrap that he looked sort of agitated beforehand. Speak to Paul Townend or to Willie Mullins and they say, oh, he's always like that. I don't think what we saw at the weekend was what he's always like.
Yeah, and I was speaking to David about it because I didn't think he was either, David Casey, and he's not. Being a bit jig-joggy or bouncy is, but he was in a strop in the ring. He was napping, he wouldn't go up the left-hand side of the parade ring, he was charging down the right-hand side, he charged off down to post with Paul Townend, and he charged through the first mile and a quarter of the race. Now, you could argue he charged in Punchestown, but that was first-run freshness. He was nothing like the horse that was in Limerick at the weekend. But look, that's part of being a professional athlete, and that's what Gaelic Warrior is. He didn't perform at the weekend.
So is he not learning, essentially? What needs to change with him?
He could be a bit slow, as in
mentally.
He doesn't look too slow on the track. But no, and that's back to the drawing board, and Yeah, it's disappointing for him.
People have argued that he should drop in trip for the Arkle now for 2 miles. The problem with the Arkle is it's on the old course, it's more tightly turning, and he could just ride.
Some argued he should have run it 2 miles last weekend as well.
Well, that was on the table, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Salviga
played
better.
Yeah, that was on the table. But, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he dropped in trip.
Let us consider Grange Clare West, who was cast in his box, and that was the reason why he wasn't able to run in the Ladbrokes Novice Chase. News has now come out that he is actually out for the season, and that's a big shame. But this is a horse that's got a track record of being fragile, difficult to keep sound.
Yeah, and look, he was down to be entered at Navan or Nace, 3 mile Novice Chases again, Navan on Tuesday morning, and the entries were closed at 12 o'clock and he still wasn't sound, so he wasn't entered and obviously investigated further, and he's out now for the season, which is disappointing. But yeah, he's had his problems in the past. This is a different problem though, resulting from getting cast and banging himself, whereas in the past it was definitely exercise related.
Yeah, it's a real shame. Let's have a look at the betting for the Brown Advisory, shall we, and just see what the impact of that has been. And it's been quite a large one. So Factophile is now, after the Dublin Racing Festival, the 9-4 favourite. Grange Crest has been taken out, and that means that there's been a domino effect behind of shortened horses. I'm looking at that list and I'm thinking, does that mean that Embassy Gardens could end up running in the Brown Advisory rather than the National Hunt Chase?
Absolutely. But you're talking about Willie Mullins. Manila Cocooner could. Nick Rockets in the weekend. Corbett's Cross, he's going, looked yesterday with Derek riding him, he was going to go 4 miles. So, I don't know, I'd say that's a fairly fluid market still, but look, no runner, no bet. You could say it's a safety net, but I'd say it offers no value in a race like that.
Let's head to Sandown on Saturday for the Grade 1, the Scilly Isles Novices Chase. And this was won by Nickelback for Sarah Humphrey and James Best.
It was great to watch, and a lot to like about him. Attacks the first, and he's good at it without being asked. Flies the second of the railways, but I loved him at the third, where he gets in. He had been launching on that stride in the past, didn't launch there. Heads to the fifth fence now, where he does let rip out of James' hands, but doesn't land on it. And again at the sixth fence as well. You saw him at Kempton a couple of times at Newbury, where he dropped his hind end on the fence. Now just got there at that ditch, but he got there. And here at the ninth, in deep as well. It wasn't as aggressive as he has been. And then James said about him at the railway fences, sends him into the first one. Now when you're long at one, you're guaranteed to be long at two, but three can be in between. Pings the second one and James keeps the throttle open here and down to the last one, and now he's out and he has all those horses behind him on the back foot. But when you start to open a horse like this, you can't miss and lose momentum then. Pings the third last, second last, the Trappy Fence, JPR one, being one horse, numerous horses get that wrong, flies it, and again at the last, when he's coming to the end of his run and starting to get on fumes, he still attacked both fences, which kept the momentum and got him to the winning post. It was a great performance to watch. It was a brave but great ride. And I certainly enjoyed it.
Yeah, so Heavy was saying that she felt that the horse might be a bit better going right-handed, that he was able to use his pace over 2.5 miles, that he was taking off his feet a bit over 2 miles.
He was, but he was more professional.
He was.
Yeah, he's going the right direction. A great pot for him to win.
He was taking a bit of a chance at Newbury, wasn't he?
He did, and same at Kempton. He was, you know, landed on one. It's just his practice is starting to make perfect.
Mm. Let's take a look at the Turner's betting, shall we? Because we mentioned the Brown Advisory. Factophile's at the top of it now at 6-4. Ile Francais is still there, but is not going to be running. Genius Destiny, we've spoken about. And Gaelic Warrior, well, he was favourite, towering over this particular contest going into the Dublin Racing Festival. Coming out of it, he is 5-1. Ilette Tom, the horse we're going to talk about next, has been shortened markedly in this market. He won the Irish Arkle. He beat Founder 50, Facil Vega and Marine Nacional, who underperformed.
Yeah, look, again, they didn't go mad. Found a 50 and Fasai Vega booked out. Sinisia at the back misses the first, was dropped in beside Sharjah, Marine Nationale, and he let the Tomp in the middle. They didn't go mad, but watch Marine Nationale early. He looks to be settled. He's grand in Mikey O'Sullivan's hands. Third fence is he let the Chomp's worst jump, but you were happy with Fas or with Marine Nationale here. But when he gets down into the back straight, he let the Tomp flies the fifth and lands closer to Fasai Vigo, seems to be hanging in the air. Marine Nationale's head is starting to get higher for my money, and when his head gets higher, his nose gets out in front of him. To me, that's the tongue tie, or why he has the tongue tie. He's looking for air. and he's trying to get more into himself. Holding ground at Leopardstown probably caught him out. Last ditch, the Ford account are in it. Second last, Fasal Vigas long and low, just about gets there and found a 50 response. Now they clocked over 36 miles an hour off the bend. This was a dash. Last fence, Fasal Viga misses, Marine National misses. Neither found a 50, really. Tom were brilliant, but they were better than the other two, and he let Tom grounds it out. Even old Sharjah keeps plugging on from the back and ground. He would hate at a meeting he usually runs poorly at. But, you know, he let Tom just about gets there from found a 50, who's turned up in every top novice chase this year and has managed to win one.
It was another Danny Racing Festival on the first day, wasn't it?
It was. Fair play to Danny.
Great success.
Yeah, great day for him.
Yeah, very much so. And Ilete Tom, I suppose you're left wondering, given that he downed Fasal Vega over hurdles at the same meeting last season, is he particularly suited to Leopardstown? Does Cheltenham not suit him so much?
I think that's hard to say. Now, I know he ran the Triumph and he was quite free, but if you watched him in last year's Supreme, I don't think it went right for him at a crucial point of the race. The fourth last hurdle, he's in behind, he misses. Now, Marie National gets in front of him and closes the door. Danny's behind in the pocket, but he switches here and he gets outside Marine National. Now he's following the two you'd want to be following there, Marine National and Fasal Vega. But when he goes out on the top of the hill, it lights up Ilete Tom and he charges forward. He goes by Marine National with 5 furlongs to run. Really and truly, if you're going to go by him, it's in the last furlong you'd want to have been going by him. And he rubbers down the hill to the third last hurdle. I don't think you can say that Cheltenham didn't suit him. I just think things went backwards for him in that particular contest. Misses the third last hurdle when he gets very wide. I do think he's a better jumper of a fence too,
yes,
than he ever was a hurdle. He looked like... Can't say I looked at him as a hurdler and thought I'd love to ride him in a chase. That never crossed my mind, but he's definitely a better chaser.
Okay, so as far as you're concerned, that is a throw-out performance. Concentrate on his chase form and the fact that he's better over fences.
I would anyway.
So he's a player in the Arkle?
He is. He might now looks an open Arkle. Open Arkle.
Because going into it, obviously, Marine National was the favourite. Barry Connell has said, and this is in the Racing Post, there was no clinical reason for his underperformance. He was in time to blame the ground. He said, although on paper at Christmas and at the Dublin Racing Festival, it's broadly the same, they were two totally different ground types. There'd been watering at Leopardstown on Christmas Eve to remove firm from the chase track. It was also virgin ground not used since the previous season. At the Dublin Racing Festival, it was proper soft, heavy holding ground. Don't know whether it was as testing as that, but nonetheless, it had been raced.
Get Barry's point in the difference between ground that's being rained on at the time, which is sloppy, and ground that is starting to dry, which is holding. Not quite to the extensive language, maybe, that's been used there.
No, indeed.
But there is a difference in those two types of ground.
It was more testing on the hurdles track than the chase track.
No, it always is, anyway. Yeah. But sloppy ground to holding ground are completely different things.
Now, talk to me about Fasal Vega. Because I was fascinated by the race IQ figures that came out for this, because on average, Fasal Vega was 0.04 seconds slower in the jumping envelope than Ilete Tom. And he lost on average more than a mile an hour of speed more over fences up against that horse in the Irish Arkle. So essentially, he was coming into the fence with a good stride, but then hanging in the air?
Basically, and that's what it is. He's not jumping like a two-mile chaser, so his stride and pace take him there. He dwells in the air, and then his stride takes him away from the fence, so it makes him look like he's getting through the envelope in a reasonable time. Whereas Ilete Tom, I know he's a bit up and down, as are both. The yellow is Ilete Tom, the red is Fasal Vega. But you can see Fasal Vega never gets to the speed that Ilete Tom did. And good two-mile chasers have to be quick through the air. And if Fasal Vega, instead of losing 1 mile per hour more than Ilete Tom through the race, if he was only level with Ilete Tom on speed throughout the race, with his stride on the approach and landing, that would give him a huge gain in jumping.
Mm.
So actually hanging in the air is costing him quite a bit of ground.
And just in case you're thinking, was this a one-off at the Dublin Racing Festival? It wasn't. The same figures show up at Christmas as well. This is up against my mate Mozzie in the Grade 1 Racing Post Novice Chase. And it's just interesting, isn't it? Because this is where the data actually shows you that hanging in the air element.
It does. And, you know, what do you do about it? How do you rectify that? I don't think you do, which is what you'll see in time. You can go up and trip, but you have more jumps too.
That's what I was going to say. What do you do? I mean, he was ridden a bit more forward this time. You know, he could have been ridden more aggressively potentially,
yeah,
but his jumping won't really necessarily let you do that.
No, and they didn't go mad, but going up in trip should help. Again, the infatuation with stallions. This fella's dam, I think, is what you should be infatuated with. And I think he wants a trip like she did.
OK, interesting. The Quivega element rather than the walk in the park element. Yeah, OK. Let's have a look at the betting for the My Pension Expert, Arkell, at the Cheltenham Festival. That's a new sponsor for the race. And Marine Nacional is still favourite, but as you can see, was odds on and is now 9-4. So this is much more wide open than it was.
Yeah, it is. And horses like Calixias, JPR1, have come back to nearly single figures now. It's become a way more wide open contest, and that's not a bad thing either.
So we've got the chasers, the fully fledged, experienced chasers to deal with finally in this show. And we're going to start with the rematch. It stood at 2-2 between Galopin de Chant of Fast or Slow, and they met up again in the Irish Gold Cup.
Yeah, they did. Tactical affair. Galopin de Chant booked out. Fast or Slow followed him. We know by now Fast or Slow is a faster jumper than Galopin de Chant. Galloping quite high and steady at the first. Weren't really going that quick. 27, 28 miles an hour. Fifth fence again here. Fast or Slow. Ooh, straight in. Lands even closer than he was to Galopin de Chant. Conflated followed him. I am Maximus at the back. Last ditch when the race started, they quickened to 2 out. Gallop and jumps it well. Fast or Slow arrives up on his outside. But I suppose you're thinking, is he going to get there? He's the first one to really start the niggle. JJ is a good bit lower than Paul Townend is as they head to the bend. But they're heading up over 30 or up around 35 miles an hour at this point. And you're thinking, well, this hasn't been an end to end contest. Now, if I was Paul Townend, I'd be thinking the very same way. This is leg three of what you're hoping is 5 runs in the season. Now, Galopin, as I look at the last, they both came wide for the better ground. He looks at the wing. Paul reacts really quickly with a tap on the shoulder. Horse goes back in and never touches a twig. And that's as close as Fast or Slow gets. Conflated on suits on seats. Jack Kennedy, who rode his 100 winner then on Monday on Cocoa Beach. And I am Maximus finishes third. But Galopin wins with a lot of authority. And I guess the question is it going to be 3-2 to Galopin, or can Fast or Slow turn it back around? I'd have to think it'll be Galopin's way, but there's probably ways of looking at it that you can make a case for Fast or Slow.
Well, go through each of them when they've met before.
Yeah, so I suppose the last time they met was the John Durkin, and this was definitely jumping. So Fast or Slow, JJ Slevin got ahead of Galopin de Chant, who didn't jump on this occasion with Paul Townend. Jams on at the second fence and gets very high and deliberate. Fence past the stands. Paul gives Galopin a squeeze. Fast or Slow just pings it, and he always held the upper hand in the air and two of the jumps in his 2.5 mile contest. Appreciated sprinted down to the second last. Fast or Slow shoots through on the inside, and on this day, he was just a better horse. He was more professional on the day. He jumped the better of the two, and he showed more gears because Galopin is flat out there. So you're thinking about Sunday, well, how come he couldn't have sprinted up and got closer to him in a steadily run affair? I'm not so sure why, but look, Fast or Slow was very good on that occasion. Now, the run before that was Punchestown again, Punchestown Gold Cup. Fast or Slow sets off in front of Galopin de Chant. In Leopardstown, it was Galopin in front of Fast or Slow. Jumps well early. Obviously, a brave man's game, and Envoy Allen in this race. Fifth last fence, Paul is getting involved on Galopin de Chant. And at the fourth last fence, Fast or Slow is the one that gets done for toe. He can't go with them. Galopin de Chant goes after Envoy Allen and brave man's game. But when they get to the second last fence down the straight, the one coming home was Fast or Slow. So you're kind of thinking, well, did the sprint not suit him at Leopardstown? Yet he was able to be quicker than Galopin in the 2.5 mile race. Here he definitely comes home the better. Now, they'd both been to Cheltenham. All four of those horses had been to Cheltenham, albeit that Fast or Slow ran in a handicap. But I'm not really sure. I mean, when you go back looking at the evidence, you're kind of wondering, did Fast or Slow actually run up to his standard at the weekend? Now, Galopin's style of riding has been changed. Here he is in last year's Gold Cup. He's at the back of the field. A high senior who'll be in this year's race, going a good gallop in front, misses the fifth fence early on, gets to the seventh fence, and he's, even though he's at the back of the shot, you can see the birch. He kind of half landed on that fence. So we know Galopin is a bit high and deliberate early in a race. Fast or Slow can be very quick. Fourth last, Galopin was good. Second last here, he's brilliant. Galopin gets better in every race as the race goes on, but he's not as effective jumping early in a race. So you kind of wonder, does JJ Slevin and Martin Brazel, when they're looking at it, how How are they thinking? How are they thinking they're going to turn the form with Gallop and the Champ? Will he be a better horse with that run of Leopardstown under his belt? He hadn't run since the John Durkin. Will they change their tactics? Will they go forward to try and get in front of Gallop and the Champ? Will they be hoping a High Senior goes a really good gallop, that you put baby Gallop and is jumping under pressure early in the race? I think there's loads of ways of looking at it. I have no doubt that the betting is fairly right, but I don't see it as a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, so Gallop and Deschamps, Achilles heel might be that early scrappy jumping. I take your point that in many ways this was a stepping stone function to the Gold Cup. There was not going to be some sort of eyeballs out performance like there was in the Savills Chase again, was there, given the timing of the race? But I agree with you. I think it was Fast or Slow who probably underperformed. I can explain away the Punchestown Gold Cup defeat, but I do think maybe some better ground and, you know, going forward for Fast or Slow, that could make it interesting. They're unlikely to ride Gallop and Deschamps the same as they did in the Gold Cup.
I'd say no chance of riding him as far back as they rode him. But you look at the race and you're thinking, do you know what I mean? A High Senior being taken out of the Stayers Hurdle means he's coming here. I know he didn't make it in the Cotswold Chase.
He's in the Ryanair as well.
He's in the Ryanair. Could you go 2.5 of it? Maybe he will.
I
wouldn't. But look, I just think it'll be a much different contest. And maybe getting the lead will help Gallop and Deschamps. But I know Martin and JJ will look at it and be thinking they can find a way of turning it around.
OK, there were four scratched out of the Gold Cup this week, including Royal Pagaya. Unfortunately, that tumble he took at the last in the Cotswold Chase, well, he was sore afterwards. It isn't career-threatening, Benicia Williams said afterwards, but he is going to miss the Gold Cup. We should get also some more Gold Cup evidence this weekend at Newbury for the Betfair Denman Chase. And the key matchup there is between Shishkin and Protectorat, but those are the five that go to post. Nicky Henderson saying that Nico de Boinville rode Shishkin and work on Saturday and has also schooled him over five fences, and he was very sharp for this matchup against Protectorat. This might decide where Protectorat goes afterwards. And so just briefly going back to the Irish Gold Cup, Conflated and seated at the last, and I Am Maximus, who ended up finishing third, is among a record 61 Irish-trained entry for the Randox Grand National. That's 65% of the field of 94. Remember, there will be an earlier off-time of 4 o'clock. We're going to drop down markedly in trip for the Dublin Chase, Ruby, in which El Fabiolo saw off another young rival.
Yeah, a gentleman nearly booked out in front, Lydia, but they didn't go mad here again. 28, 29 miles an hour, gentlemen, to me, was controlling it. Il Fabiolo was a bit keen, and when he was keen, his jumping was a fraction scratchy. You see him with his head down there, going to the first fence in the back straight, and he rubs it, Dino Blues, right in his tail. I thought a much better performance from Captain Guinness, but the further the race went on, and the more Il Fabiolo settled, the better he definitely jumped. Dino Blue was doing her best to keep tabs on him, I thought, for a lot of this race. Third last fence, the two geldings way out jumped a filly there who got a little bit high, and at the second last, Il Fabiolo was easily going best. Now, obviously the last was bypassed here because of the sun had come out. Paul felt he was probably involved plenty soon. I thought it was a bit workmanlike from here home. I didn't think it was wow. Mare keeps going. I thought Captain Guinness has run better. I was slightly disappointed with Gentleman than me. But yeah, look, I suppose when you're looking at the big two, El Fabiolo was holding the aces and he's had the smoother run prior to Cheltenham, no doubt.
I definitely take the point El Fabiolo's jumping warmed up. It was a bit scratchy early on. Yeah. What did the data say?
The data says it was OK for him, but it's almost like when he's in Paul's hands, he just runs in. He doesn't back off. And when he gets relaxed, he has a much better way of jumping it, and a bit better technique of jumping. That's what I should say.
OK. Let's have a look at the betting for the Betway Queen Mother Champion Chase, shall we? There were five horses scratched from it this week, including Dino Blue. Mark Walsh said afterwards that there were just no excuses up against El Fabiolo. The mare was beaten, and that sends her definitively towards the Mrs. Paddy Power. John Bonn, who's there as second favourite against El Fabiolo. Just interesting the contrast, isn't it? When the race got going, El Fabiolo actually got better and John Bonn has got more hesitant as his season has gone on.
But I wonder, is that a small thing? And it might be nothing, but when you look at Vasa Viga hanging in the air, John Bonn slightly dwelling in the air, they're both walking the park.
You think it might be a trait?
I don't know. It's just a similarity.
OK. John Bonn was scratched from the Ryanair, by the way, so it's definitely the champion chase for him. Sir Gerhard was also taken out of that. There were seven that left the Ryanair, the 25 left in total. Let's look ahead to Saturday's big two-mile chase. This is a proper grade two, sponsored by the Betfair Exchange, the Game Spirit, and it involves Boutil, who last time we saw him fell in the Desert Orchid. Edward Stone, who's back after his fourth in the Sylvignaco Conti when he wouldn't settle. And editor De Giet, who got no rhythm early on in the Clarence House. They're up against each other there. And then, thinking of the mares, with Dino Blue heading towards the Mrs. Paddy Power, we've got the Opera Hat. Really interesting. Allegory de Vassy, Mascada, Riviera de Tell and Silas Approach are all in the entries. Allegory de Vassy dropping down to 2 miles for the first time in her career. What I've always wanted is
I was about to say that. It's what you've always been saying. On steer runs as well. Probably the wrong way around for Riviera de Tell, but having said that, most people ride the outside of the chase track in this. Masakada has to re-find her mojo from last year, I suppose.
So that's the end of the show this week. Ruby, thank you very much for your thoughts. Thank you for watching. If you do need more, there's always the column. There is the address on the screen. However, to end this week, the whole Road to Cheltenham team and everyone here at Racing TV would like to pay tribute to Keegan Kirkby, who sadly lost his life in a point-to-point accident at Charing on Sunday. Keegan was a loved and highly valued member of Paul Nicholls' team. We would like to express our deepest sympathies to Keegan's family and friends.